Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Roto Report podcast in association with Sunderland Community Soup Kitchen. It's Gav back for another pre-season update, joined by Chris as always. Hi mate.
Hello Gavin. Yes, I've got my roasted hazelnut coffee, I've got my orange juice, I'm not wearing shades, and I think I'm ready to go.
Yeah, it was a late one, although for us, the seasoned pre-season watchers of streams, I've been up for all of them, staying up past 4 o'clock in the morning when I've got work the next day and all the rest of it, you know.
Wait,
so this was a light one, I felt, you know, a little treat. Although the club managed to sort of balls up the announcement of the kickoff time, so I wasn't sure whether I was going to be staying up till 3 or 2, but turned out to be 2 because the game kicked off at 12 and... Yeah, I'm feeling fresh, me, compared to how I felt after the New Mexico game, where I felt like an absolute bag of shit because I literally, it must have been 4:30 before I got to bed, then I had to get up the next day. But the things you do, I guess, to watch Sunderland. I mean, to be honest, I told myself weeks ago, I was like, I'm not staying up for these games, bollocks to it. I'm not staying up till 4 a.m. to watch Sunderland playing a daft friendly. And then the time came, didn't it? And I was like, I might stay up, you know, I might. I don't really want to miss out. I get proper FOMO, you know. I couldn't be one of these who wake up the next day like, oh, what was the game like? Who scored? Nah, I've got to watch it live. I've got to see what's going on. But yeah, I mean, we might as well jump straight into it. The tour itself's been pretty beneficial, hasn't it? I've enjoyed it. I know when they first announced it, what was it, 4 or 5 months ago, maybe longer now, when they announced they were going over to the US, I seen the list of teams we were playing and I was a bit, oh, really? We're playing... couple of teams in the second division, a team in the third division. What's the point? You know, can we not get better opposition back home? Can we not go to maybe Europe and play a better standard of opposition in warm weather there? But having watched it all unfold and seen how the club have actually conducted themselves over there and dealt with, you know, the fans and the hospitality from the clubs that we've worked with, and hearing all about the difficulty of working in the conditions and the humidity and the heat and the altitude, even when we played New Mexico, that was talked about quite a bit. I think it's safe to say that this has been a successful trip, hasn't it? I think the club have done well, yeah. I heard the New Mexico commentators talking about this. The games were actually planned a couple of years ago. They were hoping to get there last year. It didn't happen. So they've looked at this particular area of America and thought, why not, you know? Let's go over there. Let's put the players through their paces in some difficult conditions. And we can talk about the games in a bit, but I mean, generally speaking, you know, working hard in the heat is difficult, and the players will come back to the northeast and they'll get off the plane and see it's pissing down, it's freezing, and think, bloody hell, what a difference, but they'll feel the benefit.
I think I put in the preview with the heats that they've been having, I bet you there's some of the lads that just can't wait to get to the freezing cold of the Academy of Light. They're looking forward to the wind blown through the pitches and the wind tunnel.
Putting their snoods on and all the rest of it. Yeah.
Oh, they'll all be wearing gloves next week on the training pitch and all that sort of stuff. But yeah, I mean, that, you talked about the opposition, but that's what it's all about. They've been playing in almost 40 degree heat, playing 90 minutes as well, which I think we should come on to. Is a bit of a, I've never seen that in pre-season. And I wonder if, you know, you were talking about the level of opposition and actually what it has done in at least the kind of second two, the New Mexico and the North Carolina game especially, it leveled the playing field as the game went on.
Yeah, it did.
Which kind of made it kind of difficult for the players and made it more of a kind of competitive game. But we'll come back onto that 90-minute policy. But yeah, you can see, I mean, just by that as well, like the fitness, it's all about that. It's all just kind of really kind of, it's almost kind of stress testing the players in these conditions. It's like putting them to their limits, playing kind of 90 minutes at 35, 36, even higher temperatures than that. I mean, especially in the first game in San Antonio in Texas. I mean, that was kind of bordering on 40 degrees. And the humidity as well. I mean, you know, that's up there as well, working hard in those conditions. I mean, like I said, I mean, the only thing that I would say as a tour as a whole in terms of how they've planned it out, and I think it's been great, and I think that the teams have been good, and I think I actually don't mind that level, because actually they had a lot of young lads who had lots of legs. They were really quick, and I'm talking about the opposition.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was a good test in that way. But the only thing I would say was, if you just look at the distances. Now, what I didn't understand was playing San Antonio and then going to Albuquerque, you're talking of a trip of, because we're only there for about a week. So that first trip was 700 miles, roughly. You know, maybe not as the crow flies, but roughly about 700-800 miles. And then we went 1,800 miles east. And what I didn't get was, you know, if you're going to play three games, why not, you know, if you said it's been planned for that long, you surely we might have been able to plan a game in Arizona or Oklahoma, Colorado, Kansas, Utah, somewhere around New Mexico and Texas, rather than the other side of the country. It just seems like, you know, to go 700 miles and then fly another 1,800 miles, I don't know, but that would be the only thing that I would be kind of questioning, thinking, you know, that's a lot of travelling in a week. But no, I think it's been great. I think the way that they've done it, I really like and I talked about this last time, I really like the schedule of getting back for a couple of weeks, playing two local games, then flying out on tour, playing the three games. As I said, I'm sure the club would have preferred the three games to be, or certainly the third game to have been closer to the first two. I think it was a bit, maybe you can say it's on the way back or something like that if you're looking for it. But yeah, on the whole, I think it's been cracking, and I've enjoyed it. And actually, I don't think I quite get into pre-season tours as much as I have this one.
I'd agree. Yeah, I'd agree. I think generally, I mentioned it before, I didn't want to miss the games, wherein certainly in previous years, I haven't been too bothered, really. And it's normally because I'm not as optimistic, excited as I am right now. Like, we could be playing the dog and duck at 5 a.m. and I'd probably watch it, because I just don't want to miss a game. It's the way the club's got us feeling at the minute. You know, even like, and we'll come onto the game in more depth, the North Carolina game, but even that one, I seen the lineup and I'm excited just by looking at the team. I was like, oh, you know, new lads playing at the back, Riggs starting again and all this. I just get excited when I see the team sheet now. And I think you're right. I think it's just, I'm really into it because I'm into the club so much right now. And just on the distance thing, everything's miles away in America. And I didn't realize, so it's huge. It's absolutely massive. I was looking at this the other day. The distance between San Antonio and New Mexico, as you say, if you just look at the map, like from afar, if you go on Google Maps and you just plot them out and you see it, you think, oh, they're not too far away from each other. And then you sort of do the trip and you look, and it's like 10 hours of driving distance away. But on the map, they don't actually look too far away. The US is huge, isn't it? It's just absolutely massive. I mean, compared to us, we're just a dot on the map, really, aren't we? But it's nice that we've been able to go to these places. And like I said before, these clubs have really embraced us. Like, even watching because all the streams have been provided by the clubs we've played. And they just make a huge deal out of Sunderland, because I guess we're kind of a big deal. I don't know. In the words of, is it Ron Burgundy? we're going to these places and they're like, oh, it's a really historic, because obviously the American clubs, they don't have history. They're not big historic football clubs. They don't have the history and the fan base. And with a lot of soccer fans, you know, over there,
you had their to go and general, use the word, didn't you?
Yeah. Their general knowledge of the history of football, for a lot of them, they're new fans. So it's educational in a way. You know, North Carolina are putting on a spectacle where this big historic football club from England have come across, who've had a Netflix series, which a lot of them will know us for, and it's teaching their fans, like, you know, football is quite historic in England and this, that, and the other. So you know, we've been treated like a big deal, and the hospitality we've received has been amazing. I think that's the one thing for me coming off the back of it, is the way we've been received by these clubs and the way they've treated our players and the fans, second to none. I wouldn't think twice about going back out there, honest. I think this should be, not every year, but every sort of 3-4 years, we should be looking at going over to the States to do this sort of tour again, because I just, all I've seen are benefits. And yes, it would be nice to have played maybe one game against higher level opposition, you know, maybe an MLS team, but I'm clutching at straws to find issues with the tour in general. I'm just really happy with how it's all went. And I think we're only going back to the UK now with positives in mind and not negatives.
But I think what you're talking about, the level of opposition, and I think it's all good preparation to go into the Mallorca game. So that is the game where he's gonna really kind of, that's the last preparation.
You're building up.
I know we've got Hartlepool, and you know, I'm not gonna try and pronounce it like that commentator pronounced it. But yeah, I'm sure a few people are upset after that. But
before you go, Pat, bless him though, you know, he's trying his best. He's got this, you can tell he must have had this massive sheet of notes on every player, who they played for, where they were born, what they had for the tea yesterday. He was trying his best.
His prep was unbelievable.
He puts us to shame, because our prep exists sort of 5 minutes before we start. We just watch a video on YouTube and remind ourselves who played, and that's it, you know. This guy's next level.
Yeah, no, his prep was brilliant. But being down here, I liked his Rotherham. and all that sort of stuff.
Birmingham.
But it was good. It was good. It kind of got you into kind of that US. It's almost like you were there with people commentating like that. But it was good. And like I said, it's all been building up, and I think that's going to be that Mallorca at the stadium. Like that's going to be the big one where we'll see. The building up to that opening game of the season, we'll see some partnerships, we'll see what Mowbray wants to do. And actually, the commentator said that as well, actually. But I was just going to quickly go on to what you were talking about, you know, us. I mean, look, we think we're a big deal. You know how much we think we're a big deal. We think the biggest club on earth. But, you know, the commentator was talking about, you know, going back to the Premier League days. I mean, moments like he talked about the Defoe volley against the Mags and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, over there, that we were in the Premier League for 10 years, and people remember that. You know, the Premier League's massive out there, and people still know Sunderland, even though we've been in League One for, we were there for 4 years, people still remember these. And the commentators were getting onto these moments of us being in the Premier League and big moments. And, you know, thinking back to those 10 years, there were a few good moments in there somewhere, I'm sure.
Yeah, he was rubbing the salt in a little bit for us there, because, you know, I missed that Defoe goal going for a piss. So every time I hear about it, it hurts deeply, because I missed probably the best ever goal scored in a derby just because I had a weak bladder and I decided 6 pints before the game was a good idea. And I haven't thought about that for a little while, and then he mentioned it, and then, you know, my world came crashing down again, unfortunately.
But it was good. It was good. And like I said, I think you're right. I think we are, you know, like, you know, Sunderland's a name. And I think that it's probably good timing as well after the... after the Netflix, it's probably the first opportunity after the Netflix kind of came out to get across there. And like you said, with the next season coming out on Netflix, I'd be interested if we keep going back, or whether we'll do a rotation and go out to Asia and all that sort of stuff. So yeah, that's one for next year.
We could. I don't know if you saw Wrexham are out there at the minute in the US, but they're doing the whole...
didn't they?
Yeah, they got battered off. They played Chelsea and got battered 5-0, and then they've got a couple of games against MLS teams. I think they're playing LA Galaxy and Philadelphia Union. I might be wrong. But that's the other way to approach it. You could go out there. There's other big European clubs out there. You could play a game against one of them. You could play a couple of MLS teams who, again, are in the middle of their season. And we've went a different route. Obviously, we've basically picked the games on... We want to be in as pretty much as south as we could get, because that's where the heat is. That's where the humidity is. That's where the altitude's higher. So... you know, you've got to give credit to the club. They've been pretty meticulous with, so they wanted to be in the south. They wanted to be playing teams down there. You know, that I can see why. You know, you could go to Portugal and it'll be 30 odd degrees, but it won't have the same humidity. It won't have the altitude, which really tests your fitness. And again, you know, and one thing we haven't mentioned, it's nice. We've got probably one of the best run, if not the best run branch we've got, is the one in the States, the North American Supporters Association. And it's just nice to be able to send the club out there for a couple of weeks and give those fans who are really loyal and committed, you know, they might not get every game, but a lot of them spend thousands every year flying over to Sunderland just to watch the team. They're the ones getting up in the middle of the night to watch us play or first thing in the morning. So it's nice to be able to give them some moments as well. I noticed a lot of tweets from fans out there who've never seen the team before. And it's like, can you imagine you love this club? Like, we all love it in different ways, but we all love the club. And you love this football club as much as we do, but you've never actually seen them play in person. And then they just rock up in your city and you get to watch them play. And it must be amazing. Like, what I want to do is talk to somebody maybe who that describes their experience, because I can't imagine what it feels like just to see these players that you idolise walk in front of you for the first time and actually just see them play a game. It must be amazing.
But you talk about in their backyard. I mean, we talked about how massive it is. You know, people are in New York or something like that. They've probably travelled about 7 hours or something like that to get there.
Yeah, true. And the rest, you know. So, yeah, like I say, just a brilliant tour, I think. And we might as well talk about the two games we haven't covered off properly, because last time we did a pod, we just played San Antonio. And then we went into the New Mexico game through the week. Again, 2 o'clock in the morning, kickoff over here on, I think it was Thursday morning, which was a struggle getting up in the morning. Like, I mean, by 1-2 in the afternoon, I was proper struggling. But I'm glad I got up for it, because I thought, like pretty much every game to that point, we actually played at a pace which wasn't of... I wasn't watching it and thinking, oh, this is like a pre-season game. I thought it was played at a decent pace. And again, this is another thing with playing, and we mentioned this when we talked about San Antonio. This is the thing about when you play a team in the middle of their season, they're all fit. So they're not just sitting back and playing at sort of pre-season friendly pace. And that makes you step up. That makes you go a little bit harder into tackles and pressing and all the rest of it. I thought it made for a good occasion. Yes, we tired towards the end, but given that we played the same 11 players for 90 minutes, that was always going to be the case. Mowbray said this, that he was going to split the squads and give both teams 90 minutes because fitness-wise, that's really important. It's a check in the box. They've all played 90 minutes, or most of them have played 90 minutes. And yeah, I thought it was a good game. I mean, to be 3-0 up in any game is good, but the first half, up until the point which we got the first goal, I thought it was neck and neck. I thought New Mexico played pretty well. I thought they gave as good as they got. There was a 5-minute period before we scored where I actually thought we were going to concede and that they were on top. And then out of nowhere, Pierre Ecuor, I mean, you'll have seen the goal if you're listening to this, I'm sure. What a goal. Absolute bullet. I mean, I'm glad that they've actually released the highlights now of the game played in real time, because the highlights that we put out on Twitter and all the rest of it were in slow motion. Because at the time I'm watching it, and the camera doesn't keep up with the ball. He hits it that hard. Nobody's expecting him to hit it. I think they bat off a little bit and he bats it towards goal straight in the top corner. The keeper gets nowhere near it. And I don't know if you've seen the footage that the club put out on social media, but it's brilliant. The cameraman behind the goal holding the camera gets the goal, and then the ball hits the back of the net. Pritchard grabs it, sort of shrugs his shoulder, and when he looks at the goalkeeper as if to say, you can't do much about that, mate. I mean, it was a fantastic goal, wasn't it? That's a real sign that there's more to come from Pierre Ecuor over the coming months.
What a cracking goal. And you know what the best thing about it is, and I'm just kind of watching it again now, but the best thing about it is how casually he does it. He just knocks it out.
He's done
it
a million times in training in the last couple of days.
It wasn't, I mean, obviously just the celebration and walking away and just going, yeah, I've just smashed it in from 30 yards. But it was just the one touch out of his feet. And he didn't, you know, you see some players when they're really smashing the ball and they have to kind of prepare themselves. He almost had no backlift at all. He just took one step into it and just absolutely smashed it. But yeah, Ecuor's, I'm glad he's done what he's done in pre-season, because he's taken it. And I know pre-season, you know, you can say what you want about pre-season. It's, you know, it is what it is. But he's looked the part and carried on from his form at the end of the season. And he's looked, at times he's actually looked even better. He's looking like he's... you know, possibly cementing a place in that central midfield. Because if you look at that, the team that we put out in that game, I think already you're starting to see partnerships forming. So I think looking at the teams that he's put out, I look at it the way Mowbray is putting certain partnerships together in certain games. So in the midfield, he had Dan, Neil and Ekwa together. And I can, as we stand, I know there's still the Mallorca game, there's still some time. But as we stand, I can see Mowbray, that's what he's going to go with. He's going to go with Ekwa and Dan, Neil in the middle. And because I thought it was interesting, he went with that partnership in the middle game, 90 minutes, and then they got a bit of a rest for the North Carolina game. And then I'd imagine they will start the Mallorca game at the weekend. So I can see that in terms of partnership. The other partnership I thought was really interesting, which again, I'm pleased to see, because I was a little bit worried about Pritchard going into the summer. What was going to happen with his future? You know, what was going to happen? I mean, as the season finished and you looked at the squad, you could potentially see Pritchard maybe moving on, or what were we going to do with him? Was he going to be, you know, let's say we were looking at playing two up front, and we might still be doing that depending on what strikers we bring in. But I was thinking, what's Pritchard's role going to be next season? Is he still going to be around? And actually, in pre-season, when he's been given the opportunity to play off Hamea, you can see what Pritchard's game is.
Yeah.
And the way he floats around, because early in the game, he almost had a sighter where he pulled off to the edge of the box, went a little bit wide, and then just tried to play a flat ball into Hamea. Just kind of at head height. He didn't kind of float it in. He just played it at head height. And you can already see that he's seen Hamea working and training, and he knows he's there. How many times last season in the games when Pritchard had possession on the edge of the box and he had to look back or he had to go sideways because there was nobody ahead of him because everyone was dropping deep rather than going beyond. And now he's got somebody ahead of him. You can see he's got the ball looking up and he can see someone and he's picking him out. And then he had a bit of a sighter early on that nearly got to him here. And then the goal just looked so easy. And that's Alex Pritchard. That's what he needs. If you give him somebody ahead of him, he'll pick him out. He's that sort of player. He just needs a target to say, look, give me the ball. I'll pick him out. I remember, you know, going way back, Eric Gates, where he used to say, give me the ball and I'll get Marco on his bike and he'll be in and I'll find him. And Pritchard's a bit like that, where if you give him the ball, he'll pick someone out who's making a run or he's in the box. So at the minute, I obviously we've got no other option than Hamea up front in terms of the striking positions, but I can see that being a really tasty partnership at the minute. Like Pritchard looking like he's working off him.
Yeah.
Because the other thing as well, in all of the preseason games, you look at the Shields and the Gateshead games, you looked at the New Mexico and North Carolina games. If you look at them two as pairs of games, the difference at the minute, I think, of us having a striker and not is kind of night and day. I mean, even though we got some early goals against North Carolina, we had to play a different way. We were talking about Bennett possibly playing up top, but you can see he can't do it on his own. He can't do it as a lone striker. He has to play off someone. And that is a massive difference at the minute. And I think, I certainly noticed between the Shields and the Gateshead game and the New Mexico and North Carolina game. So even though, you can talk about the opposition, you know, are at a certain level, but these things are starting to come through. Like you can see certain partnerships, you can see things working, not working. And I thought that the New Mexico game was good for that. You saw a couple of partnerships really coming off and starting to kind of build. And like I said, those two partnerships, the central midfield and Pritchard Hamea, at the minute, I'm expecting to see them against Mallorca as well.
Yeah, I think back a little further and you go back to the season we got promoted, that partnership between Pritchard and Ross Stewart was a big factor in why we went up. And Pritchard barely had any time on the pitch with Stewart last season. And I think that's why he underwhelmed for the majority, and you're bang on. I think it's because he had nobody to play off, really. You look at the squad, and we've got so many players now who are all back fit and all the rest of it. He's the most natural option in that 10 position. I mean, I think Chris Riggs had a fantastic pre-season, but we're going to have to take a step back with him. He's 16-year-old. He's not going to start games straight away. But I think actually Pritchard has low-key had a very good pre-season, and that's a big reason why, because he's mainly played off Hamea and had somebody as a focal point to hit. And just, you know, you mentioned the goal, the second one. It was a great pick-out by Pritchard, and he doesn't even jump Hamea. That's how, you know, he's massive and he doesn't have to jump. I think he's peeled off like the fullback or something, nods it down. And it just looks so simple. That's what we lacked at times last season.
Yeah, the quality of the cross just brilliant. Right.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. And then the third goal was, to be fair, I see it's scrappy and the finish was scrappy, but the actual build-up play was pretty good. Pritchard, again, he plays like a sort of a looped, lofted ball, which 09 runs onto, and 09 plays it first time with his instep across the box and causes all kinds of bother. Himia has a bit of an air shot and misses the ball, which ends up working out for the best. It lands to Lahadji. He has his first shot saved, and then it just comes back out to him and he taps it in. And yeah, I think another player who's had a decent preseason is Lahadji. He deserved his goal. And then, to be honest, as the game wore on, the fitness told. This was the one where all the talk about was how much it was played at altitude and it was difficult and all the rest of it. And, you know, New Mexico rotated their entire team at halftime, I think. So they had fresher legs than we did. And even then, though, you look at the goals we conceded. The first one we conceded is a massive deflection. I think it comes up off Hume. And I felt sorry for Matthew Young in goal because he had a brilliant game. First ever game as a Sunderland player, a senior player, 16-year-old. You look at him, he's an absolute monster. Doesn't look 16. I want to check what his dad's been feeding him like because he's there. He's massive. But I thought he had a cracking game first half. He made loads of good saves. Good at playing the ball out from the back. And yeah, he probably deserved a clean sheet for his performance. But 2 minutes from the end, we conceded that one. And then the ref gave a penalty in the last minute of the game. And it was never a penalty. And Isaac Zuleta scored it. And that made it 3-2. So I think the scoreline perhaps downplays the dominance we showed in the game. We were by far the better team. Like, yeah, plenty of positives. And that set us up nicely for the next game, which was going to obviously be a rotated team. And these lads knew off the back of that, we've had 90 minutes. We've had a chance to get, you know, the game time and all the rest of it. And we're going to maybe just train and see the rest of the trip out that way.
Just before we get into the North Carolina game, I was going to kind of pick your brains on what you think we're going to do in the goalkeeper department. Because obviously with Bass gone, we've got a couple of options because obviously Patterson's first choice and he's kind of, you know, first name on the team sheet at the minute. It's going to be Patterson. Patterson's the number one. So it's a tough situation for bringing someone in because you bring someone in and they know that they're going to start off on the bench. They're going to get splinters in their backside just like Bass. And they a lot of keepers might look at what happened with Alex Bass last season and think, well, do I want to be in that position? So the club have got a couple of options. Do they fast track someone like Richardson? Or, you know, I mean, Young is too young, you know, 16-year-old, even though he's absolutely massive. But do you fast-track someone like Richardson and say, well, you can, you know, you're on the bench for first-team games? Or, you know, do you bring an older head in to really push Patterson? But then you've got a really odd situation where they might just be sat on the bench and there might be a pain in the backside and you don't know how that's going to work out. Or do you bring in, because we were after Bishop from Man United.
And yeah, he's
highly rated. So, you know, how much do you want to kind of really put someone in behind to push Patterson, or are you quite happy for one of the young lads to take the place on the bench? So, I honestly don't know which way they're going to go.
Do you know what it is? Why not? Why not just give Richardson and Young those second and third choice berths? You look at the way we do things now, and you look at the squad and the age of all these players. What makes the goalkeeping position any different to the rest of them? I mean, I get when people say, oh, you need an experienced option in there to push Patterson, but if we, let's just say, God forbid, Patterson gets an injury, right, in August or September, I don't think they're bothered. If they think these lads are good enough, they're going to play because we've done it in every other position. And, you know, I've watched Richardson and Young on this pre-season, and it's difficult to make sort of bold statements on either of them, given they've only played friendlies. But they look like good players. And if the club are looking at both of them and thinking, we see both of these players as potential first-team options, then, to me, why would you go out and pay over £1 million for Man United's under-21s goalkeeper when you've got two lads who you've invested a lot of capital in already and a lot of faith? You know, it all depends on how highly they actually rate these two kids. But the fact that Young is starting games in pre-season at 16-year-old tells me they rate him very, very, very highly. So, yeah. Like, do you know what it is? I've got such a relaxed approach to all of this. I just, if God forbid, Patterson gets injured in the first game and we have to start Adam Richardson in the second game, I'm not arsed. I just think, great. You know what I mean? I'm just excited by it. And people might think I'm daft for saying that, but just look at the situation with Alex Bass, right? So we've needed a goalkeeper. We've went to League One to buy their Pompey's second choice goalkeeper. We've paid money for him, and he hasn't been happy, and he's gone after a year. What was the point in that? You know what I mean? And when he did play, he was shit, let's be honest. So what's the point in it? What like if that's what you're going to do, if you're going to go out and sign somebody on the basis that they're not actually going to take the place off Patterson because we actually want to develop him and we want to keep pressing ahead with him through all the mistakes. There were plenty of mistakes last season and there was opportunities to drop him and they didn't. And that tells you a lot. What's the point in going out and spending money on a player who's only going to be here for a year? I don't, to me, like, you know, if they're good enough, they're old enough, and yeah. I'd be happy with them being the second and third choice in that respect. But like I say, it all comes down to what they actually think about them. I haven't seen enough of them to say definitively that that's what they should do. But at the minute, the way things are ran, like, I trust everything. And if they decide that's the best course of action, then just I'm with it, you know.
I agree with all that. And it suggests if they're chasing someone like Bishop, that they're in the market for a keeper. So that it suggests that they're shopping for one. But for me, it all depends on, and I have no insight in this whatsoever, but for me, it probably boils down to Patterson's character. How much do the club think he needs someone behind him who's actually going to challenge him for a first-team place? Because if you have Richardson on the bench, 19-year-old, and I don't know, we've only seen bits and pieces of him, looks all right, but who knows? I don't see him all the time play for the under-21s. But it's just, you know, how much does Patterson need that? Because he'll know that if it's Richardson on the bench, then that's it. He's playing 46 games this season if he stays fit. And it's just whether the club think, do we need someone who Patterson's looking over his shoulder all the time? And it'll push Patterson to push himself. Because like I said, human nature is what it is. And if he's not challenged and someone else, a young lad's on the bench who's not going to push him, then does he, not tail off, but does he just kind of come down a notch? Is the intensity not there? But
yeah,
that's the only question mark.
I suppose you could say that exact situation is what played out last year. He had no real competition and he improved despite not having competition. So it's like,
yeah.
Like I say, we'll see, won't we? But I'm pretty relaxed on the goalkeeper thing. I see quite a lot of comments on social media from people being like, we need another goalkeeper, particularly like, you know, Patterson got, and we'll come on to it in a second, he should have done better probably for the first goal. And people, their immediate reaction is, oh, we need backup for Patterson. I think, well, you're reading too much into it, in my opinion. It's pre-season. I look at his performances in the league last year and how quickly he improved. And there was a stage when I was a bit worried about him. I thought that he's... distribution was poor. I thought his claiming of crosses was poor. Come the end of the season, he'd boxed all of that off. And I just think, well, I would rather press ahead with, you know, three lads that we believe in than bringing in somebody who we just see as backup and is probably going to leave after a year because they get frustrated from not playing. But that's just me, you know. People listening to this might disagree. Feel free to slate us up by email on Twitter or whatever the rest of it.
Yep, I'll be typing the email after we finish.
Yeah, we might as well move on to the North Carolina game quickly. We played North Carolina on Saturday morning, I guess. It feels weird saying that when it's like 12 a.m, but it was technically Saturday morning when we played North Carolina to round off the preseason tour. And again, it was a fully rotated team. We decided that it was best to go with a different team for 90 minutes or so. Unfortunately, though, you know, because of maybe the, and this is the other side, I guess, of the fact that these teams are playing at full pelt in the middle of the season. They're not going into tackles half-heartedly. They're thundering into us, and we got a couple of knocks in the game. Sounds like by Mowbray's interview that, you know, the players who went off, they're all fine. But we went with a team which, to be honest, I felt was pretty strong. And again, it reaffirms that we've got a good squad. Patterson started in goal. We played Zach Johnson at right back because Huggins didn't make the game. Guessing he's got a knock or something, which wouldn't surprise you really, would it? Danny Bart played at the back with Jensen Sealt. He got his first game for Sunderland. Lyndon Gooch captained the team playing left back. Then it was a midfield of Metetti and Bellingham with Roberts, Rigg, Clark and Bennett ahead of them. And again, like I say, you've got to remind yourself, we fully rotated the team. This is a strong squad we've got now, and you're looking and, you know, not one of these players played in that first game, so it's promising really. But The game as a whole, to be honest, in comparison to the other two, it wasn't as good in terms of quality, and it's understandable. You know, North Carolina playing the league below the two teams we've just played. But the quality probably wasn't there for the most part in terms of just the overall game. It was probably played at a little bit more of a pre-season pace than the other two as well. You know, we were 4-0 at half time. But in the second half, I thought they tested us more because they rotated the team again. They brought on young lads, and you mentioned it, young lads with pace and power and all the rest of it. And we tried to go on with the same players. And you know, you've got to bear in mind as well, we trained earlier in the day, so the lads have already been put through their paces in a training session, then had to play 90 minutes in tough conditions against a fit team. It was a decent performance, but I'm not reading too much into this one compared to the others, because at times the goals felt a little bit too easy to me. I don't know about you, but I don't think the North Carolina goalkeeper's going to be getting a contract off Sunderland anytime soon. I thought he was pretty poor. But you know, we cracked on, and I think in the end, you know, it was a decent run out. We just, yeah, the opposition wasn't too great in this one. But before I bring you in on your comments on the game, we'll quickly run through the goals. I guess the first one, Jamie Tete scored. I thought it was a lovely goal. Him and Chris Rigg linked up really well. I think Bangham plays at the Rigg. Rigg plays a 1-2, I guess, with Metete. Metete passes it and just carries on running. Rigg finds him with a great pass, gets on the end of it. He's at a dodgy angle, and you're thinking he's never going to score from there. But I think the momentum of just running so fast, he has to lash it first time. And it's a good finish, but the goalkeeper probably has to do better. Metete will be happy just to be in amongst the goals because it keeps him in the manager's mind. And unfortunately, not long after that, he got clattered and tried to play on and couldn't, and had to come off. And that meant that we had to bring on a player who'd not seen any action over the last couple of games, I guess, in Ellis Taylor. He came on and we had to shuffle the pack a bit. Rigg went into midfield with Bellingham. And I just laughed to myself because, I had to, you know, Bellingham's 17 and Rigg's 16. Combined age of 33. And that's Sunderland central midfield pairing. But they did really well. We progressed. We kept going. The second goal, which, to be fair, you know, I don't know. Again, they're defending not particularly great. But Danny Bart, great ball from Robertson, fairness, but Danny Bart's just a better header of the ball than any of their players, I think. Gets on the end of it to make it 2-0. And then it sort of it capitulated from there and North Carolina, because we got the third not long after. I think it was who got the third goal? Was it Jack Clark got the fourth one, didn't he?
It was Roberts.
Roberts, that's third. Right. Yeah, that wasn't a bad move. Decent little passing move again. Clark played it into him on the edge of the box. He scuffs it with his wrong foot and the keeper... Yeah, shit by the keeper again, really.
With his right foot.
Yeah, and then the fourth goal was Clark and it was a mile offside. But he did well. Good finish. I don't know how the linesman didn't see the offside though. He's a good 5 yards off before he gets the ball. And it was game over by half-time, really. You know, we're going into half-time and you're thinking, God, this could be a cricket score. But what happened was what happened in the other games. Because we tried to plough on, the fitness told, and we, I think by the sort of 60th minute, you're looking at our players and they're absolutely dead on their feet. But we cracked on, and like I say, Sealed came off at half-time because did he get a knee in the back? Or I can't remember what actually happened with him, but he got a canny whack and... Trying to play on, didn't he?
He was holding his knee, wasn't he?
Yeah. So he carried on till half time. Towards the end of the game, Zach Johnson pulled up with cramp a couple of times. I think he played for about 20 minutes with cramp and then gave in the last minute. Hume came on for a couple of minutes just to see the game out for us. Their two goals, just pace and power, really, against tired legs. You know, not going to read too much into it. The first one, Patterson's got to probably do better. Like, ball bounces up in front of him, doesn't it? You know, he's got plenty of time to see it because the shot comes in from the wing. You're expecting Patterson to maybe do a little bit better with that one. But the last one, I think it's just a really quick player up against tired legs. Bart should probably make a tackle, doesn't. Gooch backs off a little bit. And he lashed it into the bottom corner. It wasn't a bad finish. And yeah, as a fitness exercise, again, it tested us. Hopefully these aren't bad injuries that we've picked up. I think they were just knocks, as Mowbray said. And yeah, rounded off the tour pretty well. Another win. 5 wins from 5 in pre-season. And I don't take any pleasure in pointing this out, but I think the last time we won every game in pre-season, we finished bottom of the Premier League with 15 points. So you read into that what you will. But yeah, maybe we'll lose against Mallorca just to balance things up. But yeah, it can't even run out.
Yeah, it was. It was. And I know you talked about the pace and the tempo not being great in this last game, but I actually thought first 25 minutes until, you could argue, until Mateta went off, I thought it was really quick. And I thought Mateta actually was huge in kind of dictating it. It was all Mateta seemed to be driving us, and kind of everything seemed to be going through him and Chris Rigg as well, you could argue. But he's looking really sharp in pre-season. I like the look of Mateta in pre-season. He's come back and he hasn't looked like he's, well, you don't know what's happened behind the scenes, but certainly in games he's not looking like he's sulking. He's looking like he's ready for the challenge to try and push for the first team. And it's good to see, because I quite like Jim Mateta. He's not a world beater, but when he's been on the pitch, you've noticed him, because he's been up for it and he's done certain things right. And actually, that first 25 minutes, I liked how we, even with short passes, we got the ball forward really quickly. Like, we got from back to front within four or five passes, but with really short space of time. It was kind of quick fire passes, and before we knew it, we were on the edge of their box. And the other thing Mateta has been doing in preseason, which I quite like, he's been making ground by carrying the ball like huge distances and getting us.
I think that's his biggest strength.
I mean, him in the middle of the park with Bellingham as well looked really good. And like I said, the game's kind of changed, I thought, when Mateta got injured. The pace, the sting came out of the game a little bit. Because actually, just before he got injured, I did think Mateta was getting kind of on the wrong side of a couple of their players with some of the tackles he was going in with. And I thought, actually, he might get hooked. I thought the same with Clark in the second half. There was a bit of needle between Clark and some of their players as well. And I thought,
yeah, he was arguing with the ref a bit as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, which is good. I mean, you know, pre-season. But yeah, I mean, the other thing, Danny Bart, I mean, he looked ancient. You know, when the camera went on him compared... when the camera went on him in the box and he was just next to all these kids... He just looked like an old man.
He's like Wayne Lineker in Ibiza, isn't he?
All you could see is Danny Bart above everyone, and he just looked like an old man playing with a bunch of like 16-year-olds.
That's definitely Wayne Lineker.
But yeah, it was good. Chris Rigg as well. You know, Chris Rigg, I thought he did really well. That ball to Mateta, I thought it was weighted just nicely for him, and Mateta could run onto it and do his thing. Good finish as well. Yeah, it was this kind of 90-minute policy as well. I mean, let's come on to that a little bit, because yes, it evened the game up. It really pushed the players. But a couple of things I didn't quite get was the whole Zach Johnson thing. If he's got cramp, and he took a bit of a blow to the head at one point and went down, and I'm just like, and that was late in the game. And I just think, bring him off. You know, it's pre-season.
Yeah.
Just bring him off. And I just thought, part of us really liked the fact we were pushing them 90 minutes, and I thought, yeah, no, that's good. But another part of us was thinking, you're really risking injury. Like, some of the players were kind of pushing right to the limit, and, you know, there's probably pros and cons about that. I mean, I'm not, you know, we're not physios or like that. We don't know kind of going into the, was it the red zone that Arsene Wenger used to call it when players are really pushed? But I don't know. It just, a couple of times I just thought, just bring him off. If he's struggling, just kind of, you know, don't risk injury or anything like that. But and we picked up a couple, you know, like Mateta, but that was nothing to do with fitness. That was him just charging into every tackle. But in that sense, I think it was good, because, you know, in the second half they changed. I think they made six or seven changes, all young kids as well, like loads of legs, pace, because you could, I mean. Their second goal was just all about that. Like you said, Gooch and Danny Bart were absolutely knackered. I mean, they couldn't be asked to kind of just swing a foot while that young lad just waltzed around them. I mean, if that's in the first 5 minutes, like, they're both kind of swarming around him, they've clattered him, and they've got the ball, and we've got a clear. But, you know, an hour into the game in 40-degree heat, they didn't have the energy to put a tackle in by that point. They're absolutely knackered. But yeah, it was. I thought it was good. I thought it was good game. Until the players got absolutely shattered. But it was interesting at that point that, you know, Mowbray just allowed them to struggle, because we struggled to keep hold of the ball. We struggled to. I felt sorry early on for Bennett until we changed the system, and I have felt a bit sorry for Bennett. I mean, he got that good goal in the first game, and I just felt that playing him up front as a lone striker in this one, it just is a bit of a waste of time for Bennett. I mean, you might as well have played Clark up in that position and let Bennett play out wide, and see more of Bennett in his more natural position. But that's probably the only criticism I can kind of say at the. I mean, he changed position when we changed to a back three when Mateta went off. But yeah, I mean, all these things. It's funny because we're talking about all these things of the game, which actually shows that it was a good run out and it was a good test.
Yeah, well, we've managed to talk for 40-odd minutes about it. So, I mean, one thing we can say, at least the Hurst didn't drive onto the pitch, although it might have improved the pitch against New Mexico if somebody had drove on there and cut the grass up a bit for us. But yeah, just like I say, a good tour, and I'm over the moon that we came away. Plenty of positives, plenty of things to ponder. Young players doing things which put them into the manager's mind. And, you know, I've watched Chris Rigg just grow in front of us. And he again, we haven't really talked about him, but in that North Carolina game, he was fantastic. Yeah. I thought, you know, played really, really well. He looks every bit a first team player, and I'm sure he'll get his chance this season.
What's been interesting about Rigg is we've played him in that, he's almost been played in that Pritchard role. So the same role Pritchard played against New Mexico, that's the role he played against North Carolina. And
yeah.
And with, I thought that, you know, the partnership between Rigg and Mateta especially, they seem to link up quite a lot. But it seems like if Rigg's going to start games, he's not going to start games as a orthodox central midfielder. He's going to play in that kind of 10 role behind a striker.
Yeah, well, I think just you look, you know, although he's coping physically, it's a different ask asking him to play as an actual central midfield player in the championship. As a 10, you get away with it a little bit more because your main job is just linking up the play, isn't it? And allowing the two players behind you to do all the donkey work. But yeah, I'm again, just keep repeating myself, but really, really happy with how it all went.
Yeah, and the other thing as well, you look at, we've played 5 friendlies, 18 goals scored, 10 conceded. So that's, what, an average scoreline of 3-2. If we carry on like that, it's going to be some season, isn't it?
Oh, yes, I think so. I mean, and Mowbray talked a little bit about it in his post-match because he mentioned the goals that we've conceded and scored. And it is worth pointing out that we haven't actually played our strongest team. So it's not like we've put the best defence we've got out. It's not like we've put the best attack out that we've got. So you can't read too much into the goals conceded, I don't think. I think it's different gravy when you're playing against proper teams. And that's no disrespect to the teams we've played. I'm just, you know, South Shields, Gateshead, both non-league. The teams we've played out here, I'm not in the US, of course, but out in the US, not quite of the standard of a La Liga club like we're about to play. I think they're in La Liga, aren't they, Mallorca? And then obviously going up the championship.
Mid-table.
Yeah, so
finished ninth in La Liga last season, so it should be a good game.
Yeah, so we'll be back around that game, after the game, probably talking about how we've battered Mallorca, hopefully. It's a shame it wasn't away, but never mind. I'm not going to dwell too much on that. I just fancied a weekend away somewhere. Quickly before we go, we did ask for some 3-word reviews for the US tour on Twitter, and I'm going to blast through them. So not any game in specific, just the tour as a whole. Ian Mackham says good run out. Rob Ellison Davidson says hopefully strikers incoming. Anne Caldwell says young talents excel. Paul Jennings says no clean sheets. David at Snakefinger99, he says stay calm everyone. Joe Lewins says it's a start. Old Papa Mowbray says need more strikers. Ropper says goals, goals, goals. Mowbray Belichick says USA goals galore. There we go. I think people are happy, put it that way. Everyone's happy with seeing the young players, all the goals. Puts us into a good mood going into the season. A little bit of momentum. That's all we want, really. You know, we talk a lot about is there anything we can read into performances and results in pre-season. And I'm always the first person when we lose games who stands and goes, ah, it doesn't matter. You can't read too much into it. But then when we're winning games, I can't help but get a little bit carried away. And that's the position I've found myself in. I can't help it. I just like watching my team score goals and win games and, you know, new signings doing well and kids coming through doing well. It's all good. And, you know, we might get brought back down to earth with that Mallorca game, but I guess we'll wait and see. Right now, really positive.
Well, that's it. It's not results at this stage. I mean, when I'm watching these games, I'm trying to focus on partnerships because the way he's done his 11, I honestly think he's tried to set up certain partnerships in different games that are likely to start the season, and trying to pick those out has been interesting because I think Mowbray has kind of shook up his squad quite well in pre-season, but even though he's completely split the squad at times, he's still kept certain partnerships together. So it gives a clue, I think, for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, we'll be back after Mallorca. Cheers, Chris.
No bother. Cheers, man.
Thanks, as always. Thanks to the listeners. Thanks to everyone who contributed on Twitter to the 3-word reviews. And we'll be back after Mallorca. We'll see you then.